This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and happy Chinese New Year. This is Frida Liu and you're listening to Enterprise. It's also the third Monday of the month and Shankar Santaram of EQTD Consulting finds that people who are impassioned about their work usually exceed the expectations of the standards set by their organization. When the need arises, they'll be willing to come in early, stay late at work, or even take work home. They're not workaholics, but they just recognize the need to extra effort to get things done properly and in a time manner. So in this motivational Monday, Shankar is here to share with us the need to be passionate at work.
Good morning.
happy Chinese.
Kong Hei Fat Choy. Did I say that right? Which language is that? I'm from correct. Penang, so we say it slightly differently then.
That's it in Hokkien, right? So you are here for the third lesson of your 12th session series. I love how you put down 12, so I know that we
I'm
can't
gonna stick
get
with you for a year. That's the deal. That's always the deal. I love the introduction, you know, this like, you know, people who are willing to come early and stay late.
Right.
Who are these people? When have we I haven't met these people in a long time.
When I look in the mirror, I don't see that person. All right. So you talk, of course, this is our developing a personal growth culture. So last month we discussed the importance of being professional and how to go about achieving it. So a recap.
Because I see you once a month, it's important to have a recap, I think. Except I'm now learning the art of trying to recap it without taking half the show. Perhaps that's my Chinese New Year resolution for 2018. Yeah, last month we actually talked about personal value. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I suggested three fundamental personal leadership rules that we all need to adhere to. The first one is for us to focus on our competency. You know, always think about how we can actually improve our skills, upskill and do better at what we do and increase our knowledge base in. I think that's what we all get paid for at the end of the day. We all get paid for our skills and knowledge, and that's what we should be focusing on. The next thing is learning to be reliable. Reliability and consistency are paramount in this modern world of existence. And I'm not talking about just in my weekly column in one of the daily newspapers, which I write every Friday. Last Friday, I talked about consistency. I talked about the fact that consistency is founded on reliability. And many people sometimes ask me this question. They say, you want us to be consistent, but, you know, does that mean repetitively doing something mindlessly? To some extent, yes, because you need to repetitively ride a bicycle until you know how to ride it. And some of us get it after the third round or third attempt, and some of us take a month or two to get it, and sometimes people take much longer. But once you learn how to do it, you scarcely forget how to ride a bicycle, for example, driving a car, so on and so forth. So I think Malcolm Gladwell wrote a book called Blink, and he talked about, you know, attempting to do something 10,000 hours before you do it. I don't know how what is the efficacy of that, but I do realize that the more I do this, for example, is my ninth year being on air with you. I hope I'm slightly better than when I started 9 years ago. And obviously, I still can't keep my sentences short. I'm trying very hard to do that. But yeah, of course, there is a certain amount, certain element of repetition. But more than the repetition, what repetition does do is if you don't do it mindlessly, if you do it mindfully, then repetition will teach you more about yourself, will actually give you enough pointers to for you to actually test and model and see, you know, I'm doing this repeatedly and this is the result I'm getting. What should I do to evolve? Evolution comes from repetition.
Right.
And that's one of the things which I'm very strong about.
You know, because it is very easy to just say, oh, and that's the thing, I think, the word is mindless, right? Because I can say, oh, personal growth culture, I've been doing this for 10 years.
Actually, we do this for our whole
lives, right? But you can say, oh, so boring. I'm doing this again.
That's
absolutely. Then I can do this interview mindlessly.
That's right.
Right? And think it's a chore.
Absolutely.
Or do I say, okay, what has Shankar got to tell me?
Or
this?
What else has he got to tell
what
me?
Else
or, what else has he got to tell me apart from the stuff that he told me 5 years ago or 9 years ago? Is it going to be different? And each of us has a different experience which is colored and peppered by our life experiences and by the people and the situations and the leadership issues and leadership challenges challenges that we face on an almost daily basis, and we learn from that. And being a CEO of an organization, and having been the CEO of an organization, one organization, or rather for the last maybe 18 years or so, I find that I'm a better CEO, not that I'm an exemplary CEO, but I'm a better CEO simply because of this repetition. And you now when I face situations, often I have a memory bank and I have recall ability.
I think the word is Kaizen.
It
is repetition, yeah. But improvement all
constant
the time.
And never-ending improvement. And the last final rule, which I talked about the last time, is to be work-focused. And everyone has got problems. We all have problems on a daily basis. We have emotional problems. We have problems life. To do with life, problems to do with our finances, problems to do with relationships, actually. Primarily the big problems that we all face, the problems that have the biggest...
Always involves other people.
Yeah, and usually people that we care about.
Yeah.
That's where your relationship problems... You know, having a problem with someone you don't care about is very easy because you just read it, you laugh about it, you move on. You don't carry it and park it in your head. But when you have a problem with, say, your spouse or your husband, or your wife, your child, your parents, for example, they stick in your mind and they occupy a lot of space. The irony is personal leadership, the efficacy comes down tremendously when you get impeded by your personal problems. The old school of management is for employers to tell their employees, leave your problems at the door before you come into the office. Now, yes, there is some merit in saying this, but I don't think anyone can actually do this because your problems are like your shadow. They follow you around wherever you go. Essentially, you just learn the art of not parking it at the forefront of your mind and let it consume you on a daily basis to the point where you can't function effectively elsewhere. That's the technique that we have to learn. And that, again, comes from repetition, that comes from consistency and being reliable, that comes from passion, which is what I'd like to talk about today.
Okay. So this month we're focusing on being passionate at work. Tell me more, dare I ask.
Tell me more is just code word for you to let me speak incessantly for the next 20 minutes. I'm going to try and cut this down a little bit. Because I think all of us understand the various iterations of passion. We are passionate about different things at different times in our life. When I was at university, at the age of 18, 19, and 20, my passions were directed elsewhere from where they are right now. At that time, as a student in a beautiful little seaside city and town in England called Brighton, my passion was to not be at university. My passion was to explore the world. To be enrolled so that the folks won't be mad at, me being there. And to ensure that I had a mixture of a loan from my folks, a loan from a bank, plus a little bit of my parents' own money and so on, clubbed together to get me to university. But still, it wasn't enough for me to survive on a daily basis. So I had to work. So I worked. I did multiple jobs at university. And I found that doing those jobs made me passionate as a human being. It's interesting. I did three major jobs when I was at university. One is I worked in a bar. And I worked four nights a week in a bar. And I chose to work in a bar four nights a week. And I chose to work on the busy Thursday, Fridays, Saturdays, and during the day on Sunday. And I picked these days because these are the days that I found, because I repetitively checked on what my personal modality was, I found that these are the days when I was most tempted to spend money anyway in the evenings. Right, because I would have to go out with my friends on a Friday night, or because you're at university, everybody is going, and you're the only one who's got no money. So I still went, but then I would spend most of the time, nursing one drink for 8 hours, or I would, make a lot of friends and hope somebody would buy me a beer every time I went out. And I found this quite demoralizing in some ways, and my self-worth started, diminishing a little bit because I felt like, wow, I'm the poorest dude in this whole group and everyone else. But I think, I worked out that I'll get a job at those nights so that nobody can actually say that I'm being antisocial and not coming out. And in fact, I would be in an environment where everybody else would come there and they would buy me a drink now because I'm working behind the bar. So I worked behind the bar. So that was my passion. So my passion to study law, if I think about life, my passion to study law took a secondary role. My passion to earn money. A lot of people say, your passion to work in a pub or a bar. No, it wasn't a passion to work in a pub or a bar. It was a passion to earn money so that I could live.
It's a passion to own one.
It's funny. I'm coming to that, in terms of... So that was priority at the time.
Okay.
To just live. The second thing I did was I would wake up very early on Sunday mornings and run use my boss who ran this who owned this bar had a Volvo 240 estate, right? Which meant that, you know, you could dump stuff at the back. And I went into partnership with him. I just created this idea and I told him, hey, you know what? And Graham, that was his name, Graham Boyd, at this pub in England, the London Unity Pub. And I told him, if you lend me your car every Sunday morning, I will go at 4 o'clock in the morning to Brighton Railway Station and I will open up a car boot sale stand. And I would buy stuff on Saturdays. You give me the seed money to buy because I had no money. I said, if you gave me £50 or if you gave me £100, he usually gave me about 20 to 30 the first few times when I tried. So I would drive around in his car on Saturday afternoons, go to church jumble sales, which always happened all through the year. Open, you know when people, what do you call it? Backyard sales, right? So backyard sales and car boots and church fairs and feats and church jumble sales. I would buy little trinkets and bits and pieces with that 30 or 40 or whatever pounds that I had. That was the seed money. Use his car. But I had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and get to Brighton Railway Station early enough because the Sunday market would open at about 5:30 in the morning or 6. You had to go early so you got a good spot. Right, so I'd get into the queue, I'd stay, go in there, open up my stall with this little, table, open the boot, put stuff out, and I honed my selling skills because I would buy things that looked slightly Asian, and then I would just stand there and say that this has been in my family for the last 30 years. It was funny, so one weekend I would be Malaysian, another weekend I'd be Indian. Many weekends I'd be Indian because I look Indian. I'd have to go to different parts of, South Asia, and I'd be Nepali and Sri Lankan and all sorts of other things. I had uncles and aunties, and I would share that money with my landlord every Sunday, and that helped me. And the other thing I did was I rented myself out as a bit of a chef. I had to learn how to cook when I was there because I didn't like the food. I liked the food, but I also missed my own food and eating our stuff. And I learned how to cook really well at that time. That 6 years of living there, I learned how to cook, and I rented myself out as a chef. As a home chef, so I'd turn up at your house and cook a meal, and then I would leave before your guests show up at 6 o'clock. I would agree on a two-person meal or four or six or what. It's usually for dinner parties, so anywhere 4 to 8 or 10. I think the largest I did was about 20 people once. And I would come early by about 11, 12 o'clock in the afternoon to your house, use your kitchen, bring my own, use your equipment, but bring my own produce, make the food, and then leave by 6, and then leave it entirely up to you to tell your guests whether you hired a private chef, which makes you look kind of like, bourgeois, if you can actually do that. Or you can also lie and tell them that you made the food yourself. Nobody will know because it came out of your oven. And so I did these three things. And it's just ironic that my passion while at university should have been studying law. Right, which I eventually, I graduated. I mean, through doing all of this and traveling through Europe and traveling to Africa and America and all sorts of other things, earning that money that I did from doing these three things, the bar, the food, and the car boot sales, I traveled all over Europe 3 times. I traveled to North Africa. I came back to Malaysia 7 times in 6 years. Right? I went one of my biggest holidays was to go to New York City as a student, and it was amazing. And I did all of that with no money off the back of my folks, simply because they didn't have money to send me. My parents were middle class teachers and university lecturers. My father was a university teacher, my mother was a school teacher, and, glamorous jobs with no money. That's essentially what teachers are in this country, especially. This is not Norway or Finland, where they're the highest paid people. Here, they are very well respected, but they don't earn a lot of money. But I was able to do this. So I think today, it's ironic, right? So what do I do today with my life? I'm almost 50 years old, and this is a story from 30 years ago. Passion. We're talking about passion, and I thought I would infuse this passion with my own life story. Today, I run a training and management consulting company focusing on leadership. That's what I do. So, which means I have some of the best blue chip companies in this country, as well as a lot of NGOs and government agencies who work with me, and I do this for a living. That's my bread and butter stuff. I run training programs, pharmaceutical companies, et cetera, et cetera. Go and look at my website. You can see what the stuff I do there. So that's one part of it. And I think 40% of my time is spent there. That comes from my car boot sales.
Right.
That's learning the art of selling. That's learning the art of connecting. That's learning the art of creating relationships with people. And that's what I do. So in my leadership coaching program, I use a model called the GROW model, but primarily it's about building relationships. If I'm able to build relationships with my coachees, they're able to build relationships with their upliners and downliners and deliver better results. People come back to me to get coaching sessions. Now, the other two parts of what I do, cooking and working in a bar.
Right.
I own a bistro restaurant in Samantan Dr. Ismail. It's a small hole in the wall that employs about 12 people. But we have phenomenal revenue in terms of the size that we are and what we do. We're a neighborhood bistro bar. And, you know, if you come to my place, and you've come to my place many times, the food is quite nice. Mm. We curate our, you know, drinks, food and beverage very nicely. But more importantly, we spend a lot of time and energy and effort training our staff with service, getting them to understand. So we've got ordinary people working there, producing extraordinary results.
Right.
And this comes from my passion from before.
Right.
Working in a restaurant now, working in a bar before, being a private chef before, which is what I do. I have absolutely no problem donning a chef's jacket and doing videos for my restaurant right now. And people ask me sometimes, don't you think that dilutes your brand? I say, well, it doesn't actually, because that is my brand.
Right.
My brand is that. I am a leadership coach. I am also a publican. I am also an owner of a comedy club. Mm. I am also a chef.
Mm.
So why can't I be all three or four? It's funny, isn't it?
Mm.
I do all the stuff that I was passionate about at university. I'm not a lawyer, incidentally.
We'll talk a little bit more about being passionate at work with Shankar Santarum from EQTD Consulting after this. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise. Good morning. This is Frida Liu. Happy Chinese New Year. It's Motivational Monday. Shankar Santor from EQTD Consulting. He's here for the third Monday of the month. Of course, it's our series, Developing a Personal Growth Culture, and it's about being passionate at work. And you were sharing stories of your youth.
Just short stories.
And they were not misspent youth. They were very well utilized youth. So
my folks thought they were misspent youth.
Yeah, and we're talking now traits of employees, though. What are some of the common traits of passionate employees?
Well, first thing is, let's start off with this. I mean, I can rattle off all the traits. And I think, you know, we were talking about this earlier. Somebody coming on and listening to me after 9 years, if we had a regular listener, which I do have, people write me messages sometimes and say, like, are you on BFM? You spoke about this in 2002 and I can't remember that. 2012. I can't remember that I did it. So I can rattle off stuff, and you have other business experts and coaches and all sorts of people coming out, and they'll all tell you what the trades are of a passionate employee. And I will touch that a little bit. But before we get into what are the traits of a passionate employee, I would like to just suggest to everybody listening out there that the first thing is you need to spend enough time figuring out what your passion is.
Mm.
And that's what a lot of us don't do.
Right. Okay to be passionate about many things.
Yep. To start off with. Mm. And what will happen is it's almost natural that you'll be passionate about many things because you will have different interests in your life. And at different ages, you'll have different skews in that particular interest. And each time you do it, you need to repetitively do it consistently for a particular period of time to figure out whether you like it or not. Mm. See, there's a reason why we know that as kids, when in primary school you're asked what you'd like to do when you grow up, apakah cita-cita kamu bila kamu menjadi seorang yang dewasa? It's the question that every national type school at the time when the teacher wants to take a little break and doesn't know what else to do, you'll spend a 40-minute class just talking about this, perhaps. And it was nice. And I remember from my own experience that nobody got up and said, I want to be an administrative clerk somewhere, or I want to be a business executive. You know, they would say things like, I want to be a train driver, an astronaut, a pilot, a lawyer, a doctor, a broadcaster, I want to be on television. Because these are things that young kids see. They notice this. And sometimes they will pick up jobs that their folks do. And, you know, I want to be, and they'd look, or they would look at the neighbor, and the doctor neighbor would have a better car than them. Therefore, it must be that if I become a doctor, I will have a car, which is as beautiful as my neighbor's car, not as good as my mom's car or my dad's car. For example, I think the fundamental kind of, you know, rudimentary psychology that I understand tells me that that's the deal. So essentially, as kids, we do this. We look, we observe, and we go, oh, we like that, we like this, we like that. It's like everything else. We always think, oh, we will like that. And then we will go and attempt it, and then we go like, oh no, that's a bit too much. And that's why we start things and don't finish. And life is a bit like that. So at that time when you start a new venture, or the time when you start a new project, or you get involved in a new hobby, it is always exciting in the initial stages. But it requires a certain amount of discipline and persistence
and tenacity.
Tenacity to get to the end. Of not the end of the project, because projects never really end. They evolve all the time. But get to the end of your own journey in terms of determining whether you have passion or not in that particular area. So let's take my example again. So I did the whole bar thing. I did the restaurant thing. I did the selling thing. And I found that as I was doing this, I was passionate about this. And of course, I couch my life around my successes. So when I tell stories on radio or in my training programs, or when I write about it in my books or in my columns, this is what I say. I don't tell you about all the failures I've had, but I've had an inordinate amount of failures along the way. I tried to be a textile merchant. Mm. I failed miserably at doing that, right? Mm. For example, you know, I tried to be a kind of, you know, a business consultant to teach companies how to turn their businesses around. I'm a salesman. Do you know what I mean? And I know how to lead people, but I don't really know the nitty-gritty of business. So, for example, when clients come to me right now and ask me about turning their business around, I give them Jeevan Sahadevan's phone number and say, go to the business coach, because that guy will really help you and turn your businesses around, because he knows the steps to take you off. Come to me when you have problems after you see Jeevan and you've got your business up and running, and then you have 50 people working for you, come and talk to me. Then I will turn those people around to give you optimal results, because my work is this. But I tried the business thing, it didn't work. I tried the textile thing, it didn't work. There are so many other things I tried along the way that did not work. My first attempt at a restaurant failed miserably. Right, my first attempt at a restaurant in 1997, so about 20 years ago, I lasted for 2 years and left me with 200,000 ringgit worth of debt in 1997 when I was 28 years old or whatever, 27 years old. So you can imagine the blows that I've had to deal with along the way. So your passion sometimes also doesn't immediately translate to results. It is learning about yourself. It is understanding. So now I'm opening businesses, you know, and I do open, I get involved in businesses, and it becomes almost second nature. I sense how to run a business. People will say things like this, you know, my boss has this uncanny ability to read people and deliver the best results for the team. That doesn't come because he or she woke up in a cave with enlightenment one day. It came because they got messed up in their life. They got involved. They rolled their sleeve. They worked out what their passion is. Eventually, they get there. Right. And this is what we need to invest in. So what is a passionate employee? What are the traits of a passionate employee? The first thing is, a passionate employee starts off with actually testing and modeling, trying to figure out what their passion is. So if you're interviewing anyone out there for a job, you want people who have tried things and have failed. Right? So you don't want an interviewee who shows up with a pristine, what I call a pristine CV of only successes. Right? Because then you know there's something deeply wrong with this, this picture. Right. And I want to talk to you, and I would like you to tell me what your failures are. A lot of Fortune 500 companies in America, and there's some research that has come out from Harvard, at the moment that they focus, they play, you know, the old days, you had to do a kind of a seat or secret check to take people, you know, you want Fortune 500 companies would do a background check first on your finances. Today, Fortune 500 companies are doing the same background check to see how much of bankruptcy you have, or how many checks you've not paid, and all the problems and all the businesses that you've started. Then they call you for an interview and ask you to explain why. Right. In that process of explaining, the interviewers are now trained to discern whether the person talking to you has learned anything or not. And that they place a greater value on than the fact that this kid has shown up with an MBA from Harvard Business School but has not done a single day's hard work in terms of actually dealing with the rigmarole of life and all the issues and problems. So please first go out and find your passion. Experience it. Experiment, fall, wake up, and go. And along the way, the tenacity will teach you something about yourself. What is it that you will continue to do even when you fail? That tells you that you're passionate about that.
Right.
What is it that you're willing to do, right? Even if you don't get paid a single cent for, that will tell you what your passion is. These are the two benchmarks for me. Right. Even as you fail, you keep doing it. And it's not mindless optimism. You know that it's there. You know somewhere in there is a result, and you keep going for it. And the next one is, if I don't get paid, will I still do it? I will speak for a living if I don't get paid. I know this. I will cook for a living if I don't wait, get paid. I might not be able to sell alcohol because I might not have money to buy the alcohol, but I will sell you, I'll give you something to do. I'll give you water and food. Mm. You know what I mean? And that's what I do.
You make some magic with that okra.
That's it. Thank you. You've tried my recipes. Absolutely. But yeah, for that's essentially it. I know this. You know, I learned this also, funnily, a few years ago. I had a business in India. Oh, that's another failed venture, which I forgot. It didn't come to my mind. I set up a children's education franchise in India, which I invested close to 300,000-400,000 ringgit. And I had to leave after 2 years. I didn't lose any big money when I was there, but I did lose a lot of my time here, which means my earning capacity in Malaysia diminished tremendously. And the passion. Passion. And I realized my passion was not opening a business in India. Right? And my passion was actually not the business. My passion at the time was actually going to India. I love India. Do you know what I mean? There's something kind of very guttural and seminal about, you know, going back to India, having that heritage. I found that I enjoyed the fact that I spent half the week in India and half the week in Malaysia. I would get up every week on Monday morning and take the 7:05 flight. I used to fly Jet Airways and 7:00 flight in the morning. And I'd come back on Wednesday night. I'd take the Wednesday night flight, arrive back here in KL on Thursday morning. So I would work Monday to Wednesday in India, and I would work Friday, Saturday, and Thursday, Friday, and Saturday here because we have a lot of training programs at the weekend. Did this for 3 years, and I had to sell that business in India because I realized that the business was not my passion. The fact that I was going to India was my passion, and then after 3 years, I thought, I've seen a lot of India already. I'm done now. I'm not interested. And then, you know, it's ironic. I sold that business in 2008. And I didn't go to India for 8 years after that. Ugh. I traveled the world. I mean, I travel a lot. You know my travel plans. I go every 6 weeks somewhere. Ugh. And I never went back to India for almost 8 years. And then I went back with my wife a couple of years. Well, last year, beginning of last year. So it was 9 years that I hadn't gone. I was fatigued by India in working. So you can imagine, I learned that my passion was not actually running a business in India. My passion was actually going to India. And then you know that so you have to test and model. And this is what repetition and consistency does for you. And this is what will teach you what your passion is.
Right.
Eventually.
We'll talk a little bit more about this being passionate at work after this with Shankar Sancher from EQTD Consulting. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Build financial mountains. BFM 89.9.
It's Motivational Monday. Raise your game. Call it what you will.
Are you motivated, Frida? You motivated after this night. You went somewhere for a break, didn't you?
Shankar Sancher from EQ.
Oh, are you not answering my question?
Yes, I did. It was a lovely break. Shankar Sancher from EQTD Consulting. It's our Developing a Personal Growth Culture series and being passionate at work. And you know, earlier on you were talking about testing and modeling to see what is it that really is driving you. And along the way, you find out, actually, I want to do something else.
That's right.
But then you start something else on the pretext.
Yeah, and there's no shame in that.
Yeah, right?
There's absolutely no shame in that because I remember, it's like, I don't play golf, but I understand that golf, you're playing against your own handicap. And essentially life, you're playing against your own handicap. You're not playing against anyone else. So essentially, your success is predicated on your ability to rise above yourself, to want to be a better version of yourself. And that's got nothing to do with this person sitting next to you, standing next to you, or the person who gave birth to you, or the person that you married to. You know, and I think if we understand this, then you'll find that life becomes such a joy because you're playing against your own self. And when you get upset with yourself, not with anyone else. And when you're successful because of yourself. So it's your fault always. Success and failure is your fault. If you start off with that premise, then you will find that your passion starts unraveling because then you're not shackled.
So other than testing and modeling, could you also say that conscientiousness plays a part in a passionate or empowered employee's behavior?
Absolutely. Conscientiousness plays an important role in your life as a human being. So when I talk about reliability, when we talked about what is success and what is last month when we talked about adding personal value, I talked about reliability as one of the three rules. And conscientiousness plays a real important part in being reliable. And what does conscientiousness actually mean? In simple terms, it's you've got to be true to yourself. You've got to be honest with yourself. And if you're lying to yourself, you've got to catch yourself and say, I have to stop mucking about and I've got to change my behavior pattern. It is my behavior pattern that leads me to this.
Yeah.
You know, it is not the person sitting around me. It's not the circumstances. It's not the government of Malaysia that makes me fail. They might have a role in making me fail, but the primary role in me failing is me. And that comes with conscientiousness. Now, it's a very simple thing you got to take. For example, at the simplest iteration, the simplest example of this at work is that when you turn up to work for 8 hours, you need to be there for 8 hours. You know, all of us are so hot about, you know, I got called by the Evening Edition last week to comment on something which I was very passionate about. They called me and said a study came up from New Zealand that they wanted to, a company in New Zealand wanted to drop down to a 6-hour work week, or they wanted to drop down to a 4-day work week so that people would have freedom and the staff and all that work. And Caroline and Ezra called me and asked me what you think about this, being our HR coach at BFM. And I'm like, okay, good, fine. This is what I think. I think it's fantastic. I think that people should come to work only for 6 hours a day. People should come to work for less than 6. All of you out there, stop lying. Right? How many hours of work do you actually do every day? Stop pretending to come to work at 8 o'clock and banging about and mucking about in the office till 10 o'clock at night. You want to miss the traffic. You don't want to go home because you have a horrendous home life sometimes. Or you have no one waiting for you at home. Or you just want your husband to deal with stuff at home, or your wife to deal with stuff at home. And your kids are annoying the life out of you. So you hang around with your pals and you go home at 8 o'clock at night. Listen, you can get your work done and meet your KPIs if you focus, concentrate, and get things done. That's essentially respecting your own time first. Yeah. See, a lot of us, we spend a lot of time telling everyone to respect the company's time, but first you need to tell them to respect their own time. Your own time is important and valuable to you. People always ask me, how do you find the time? Somebody asked my wife the other day, does your husband ever sleep? Dude, I sleep a lot. Sleeping is an important part of my life. I enjoy sleep. I've realized that, you know, losing weight, you have to sleep to lose weight as well. So I sleep 7 to 8 hours, six to 8 hours a day, which is more than most people. But yet I have all these businesses, and that's because I concentrate on them and they're important to me. So conscientiousness plays a huge role in being passionate. Conscientious employees, what do conscientious employees actually do? They are committed to the company's success. Do you know? And that's important. I fire people when people are not committed to my success. So I always tell people when they come to work for me, and it sounds very, very selfish when I say this, and I make it, your job is to make me look good. And they go like, oh, I thought I'm working for EQTD Consulting. I said, no, you're not. You're working for Shankar Santiram. Right? You work for me. And they go like, wow, this guy's a bit kind of narcissistic. Actually, no, because I am my company, and I've told them, my company is a single issue product service seller.
Okay.
We don't sell burgers and chips and bendy and sour cream or pizzas, right? Or we don't sell business services, et cetera, et cetera. We sell Shankar Santiram's competency as a leadership coach, as a trainer, and as a consultant. So I am your product. I am the cow that you milk. Right? Therefore, you need to be milking me well, which means parking me effectively in the right spots, and so on and so forth. So they need to be acutely aware that they have to be conscientious about my success. So the moment I think that you're not conscientious about my success, then I can't have you working for me, because my success means the company becomes successful. The company becomes successful means you get paid more and more and more money, and you get to travel around the world, and you get to lead the life that you want to lead. And that's what it is. And this is the disconnect that we have in organizations. I come to work, it's work, it's work, only work. And everyone, Ben, you see this constantly on Facebook, right? Your job is not going to pay you when you're not healthy, blah-de-blah-de-blah. Don't give your life, go home, spend time. I think that's counterintuitive. I think we should be telling people, do what you want. Be happy, Lamacha, whatever you do. Dude, just be happy. You want to work, work. You don't want to work, don't work. You want to go home and hang around with your family, go and hang around with your family. But be clear that all your actions and all your thoughts have direct consequences to your well-being. That's all it is. So people ask me, you work so much. No, it looks like I work a lot, but I holiday a hell of a lot as well. I spend a lot of time with my wife. This morning when we said goodbye, I came here to the studio and she went to the clinic. We said, oh my God, we've spent the last 4 days completely attached to the hip. We're going to have some kind of withdrawal symptoms. My wife left before I reached the BFM studio. She called me and said, I miss you. And I'm like, you know, we've been married for 10 years. We're both about 50 years old. So can you come? We're sounding like teenagers. And then I realized it's just because we spent 4 days kind of like constantly with each other. And that's what happens when you go away on holiday as well. Right. When that first few hours of separation is like, oh my God, something is missing. For me, it's like, where's my annoying wife? You know what I mean? You know, I have to look after her along the way. I'm sure she has the same deal with me. But that's it. I choose to spend 4 days with her all the time. Now I'll choose to spend the night. I told her next 4 days, I won't be around. She said, what do you mean? I'm working pretty much from like, you know, 9:30 in the morning till, you know, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night with meetings and stuff. No problem. I have a work-life balance. I choose my work-life balance accordingly. So this is what a conscientious worker does. A conscientious worker is completely, acutely aware of what they need to do, how they need to do, how they need to behave. And they are vested in the success of the organization.
All right. So what other characteristics have you identified that a passionate employee exhibits?
They need to be... You need to care about people. Mm-hmm. I think that's a vital cog in your passion. Everything that you do, like, you know, what does an entrepreneur do? This is enterprise. Our belt is called enterprise. What does an entrepreneur do? And an entrepreneur solves problems. That's essentially it. In a word, that's what entrepreneurs do. All right. And why does an entrepreneur successfully solve problems? Because he or she has worked out what the problem is and what solving the problem would do for people. So you need to actually be interested in solving problems for people in order to be an entrepreneur. That's a fundamental right. basis of any business that opens. Businesses that fail don't solve a problem. Therefore, there is no need for you to exist. That's why you fail. The moment you start solving a problem, I mean, like, you know, Uber and Grab in Malaysia, I mean, they solved a problem.
Oh, boy,
huge problem.
They?
We all drive less, you know what I mean, because we have that. That's why they're so in demand, you know. Airbnb solved the problem. That's why it's so in demand. You know, online banking solved the problem. That's why it's so in demand. Cheap no-frills airlines, they solved a problem. You know, Booking.com solved the problem, etc., etc. So when you have a problem and you are able to solve it, and you will not create an app which is useful if you don't know how to deal with people's problems. Right. You need to be passionate about people. So passionate people help co-workers without any fuss. They focus on... You know, I like passionate people working for me because they encourage each other, and they don't fuss about it, and they create an empowering work environment. I want to be in an empowering work environment, and I spend so much of my time with my clients right now, and I help them, I coach them, I help them with their own leadership issues and managing people, the bosses, and sometimes the senior managers. But I also spend a lot of time talking to my clients, and some of, you know, these government agencies, or so, NGOs, and, you know, GLCs, and so on and so forth, private universities. I've got one of the largest private universities in Malaysia. I coach their team. I said, we need to create a supportive, empowering environment. And they go like, nice world. We have everything. We have beautiful office, great coffee machine, holidays. We have makan every time in every festival. We bring food from everywhere and everybody sits around and we have take photos. We put on Facebook and tell the whole world that we had Deepavali party. We had Yisang. We had this. We had that. And I said, then what's the problem? About people are not working with each other. There's still a lot of, you know, silos. I'm like, so what's your problem? And you're like, so it's not working? Yeah, exactly. Your makan all not working. Because you're not actually empowering your people. Getting everyone together and having a birthday party or having food or taking them out bowling or going to a nice resort for a holiday doesn't help at the end of the day if people don't actually like each other and don't have a certain conscientiousness or don't have a kind of passionate feeling about each other. So you might be passionate about your work. You might love the work that you do. But if you're not a nice human being, you're not going to be passionate about other people. And the moment you're not passionate about other people in your organization, people won't like you. And what happens is, no matter how clever you are, then the cleverer you are, you also alienate yourself, because all people do is they tolerate you. At any given moment in time, when they can, they will do a red wedding on you. You know what I mean? They will do a red wedding on you. You know, this is a Game of Thrones reference. They will do a red wedding on you.
Lost on me. Okay,
no,
okay.
They'll do a red wedding, meaning that, you know, they will slaughter you. Right? At a point when they think that, oh, right, so you are no longer the star player in my company, because I got B, who's just arrived, and he is younger than you. He has got a better voice than you. You know what? I'm going to throw you under the bus from now. And suddenly you'll be like, oh my God, I got no support. My support network is gone. You never had support. Nobody liked you. You were just good at what you did. So they tolerated you up to the point when they found someone better than you.
Okay.
How's that? And you and I have been in organizations exactly like this. And I tell people, you need to create a certain environment of passion. Create an environment where passion can thrive and grow. And the premise for passion is that you, as an individual, need to be vested and conscientious in delivering results. But the leader of the organization needs to look at the total organization, see the wider scope of the entire organization and ensure that the organization on its own is able to sustain the idea of people building relationships with each other. That's the focus.
Right. So how would you recommend now someone maintains this high-level passion towards their job?
Passion is a state of mind more than anything else. It is a passion of state. Passion is a state of mind. You need to truly enjoy what you do. And you need to be immersed in it. It's it's immersive technology more than anything else. You've got to get involved. When I create a weekly special at my restaurant every week, Thursday to Sunday. I cook it. In my traveling schedule, my coaching schedule, my work schedule, my business schedule, I find time to go and spend in that kitchen, in my restaurant. And I spend time to work with my two sous chefs so that they understand. And because I tell you how I cook, right? So I turn up, I just have an idea. I will take everything and anything under the sun in my kitchen, whatever I have. Sometimes I'll send guys to the market, get this for me, get that for me. And then we'll create it. Everybody will taste it. And they go like, wow, that's either marvelous or holy mother of God, that's crap. You know, can you get rid of it? So it's like one of these two things will happen. So like, thankfully, it's 7 out of 10. It's, you know, excellent. And 3 times I could see the sous chefs going like, boss, this one, granola, you know. And I have one of my guys, you know, Sarkar, who was just looking and go like, salt a bit problem, this one. So and that's his code for me, that this is really bad. Salt a bit problem means, doesn't mean it's got too salty or too little salt. It just means that, oh my God, we can't sell that. Nobody's going to buy that. I'm like, yeah, okay. So I have to create. So I create this. Now then, that's my first round. So then I have to recreate it. So after I make the first round, I got to recreate it second time, because I have also realized through passion, through consistently and reliably repeating things over and over again, that just because I'm a good home cook, that doesn't make me a good industrial chef. Everyone who can cook a little bit thinks they can own a restaurant immediately and fail miserably. Everyone who has watched the Asian Food Channel thinks that they are now the next Jamie Oliver or Nigella Lawson. I mean, dude, like, calm down. Your passion is not driven by these personalities. Your passion is driven by the fact that you love something. Now, you love cooking. I love cooking. I will cook. I've cooked for you so many times that you've called me and asked me to cook for you. Right? It's my son's birthday. Make char kway teow. That's your deal with me. And I'll do it for you, right? And I'm passionate about cooking. So when I cook my char kway teow in my home for you, it tastes slightly differently from when I do it at the restaurant. The restaurant, I have to replicate, recreate. It's industrial cooking that needs to come out in 12 minutes. That's my turnaround time for the food that I have there. So now I spend another hour or two usually recreating this, and with a piece of paper and a pen with the team next to me going like, cost how much, cost how much. Our special cannot be more than 22, 23 ringgit net. Net, 23 ringgit net this week. So I go like, and I have my formula in terms of profitability, and I go like, oh my God, that doesn't work. Can't. Okay, so, mousse, I cannot use 2 tablespoons of ghee, doesn't work, because ghee is extremely expensive. So let's go 1 tablespoon of ghee and let's augment it with a little bit of oil. Let's see how it tastes. And then you go like, boss, it tastes not as nice. Time. Okay, we have to put the 2 tablespoons of ghee, but I got to cut somewhere else. Okay, no, we don't have to use mace. Oh, no, you know what? The kasuri methi, this thing that we have to buy from an Indian shop, too expensive. Pack it. I'll figure something else out. So it's almost like a science experiment, right? I failed many science subjects at school of chemistry. And food is chemistry, and it's amazing how I actually understand it, because I'm interested in food.
Right.
But you have to, when you talk about being passionate, what you need is, you have to take that passion. It's a state of mind. You've got to, that passion needs to transcend your food. That passion needs to transcend your, I am passionate about being a broadcaster. That needs to transcend. I'm passionate about being a broadcaster means I will learn the skill of being able to speak really well on air. But if it doesn't transcend, when you leave the studio, you're a complete ding-dong to everybody else. Nobody likes you. Then, you know, but the passion is, I understand that as a broadcaster, I'm just using you as an example. I understand that my producers and the people that I work with, my belt, must all connect with me, because then they'll produce great shows for me, which allows me to shine. Which allows me to do what I do best, which is to be on air and talk to Shankar Santiram. That's what I do best, for example. But I need somebody else, like Jermaine, to put things together for me. But I need to have a relationship with her in order that she understands me so deeply that she's willing to go passionately along the path of creating something wonderful for me. So what many people do at work is we get stuck with one part. That's my passion. But you don't realize that a passion has to transcend and run across the board. That passion needs to inspire others to do things for you. And that means you might not be passionate about people. I tell this to my wife. My wife, Susanna, is a vet, a holistic vet. She runs a clinic. She doesn't like people. She likes animals. And I told her, we have to change morality. You need to start learning to like people. And she goes, I can't do that. That's why I became a vet. I don't like people. That's why I like animals better. I said, but now you're not a doctor on your own. You're a person. You're a medical director of a practice. You need the people who work under you to actually like you. You know, they won't deliver results. And she goes, like, damn, I have to like people now. I'm like, That's what being passionate is about, Frida.
All right. Developing a Personal Growth Culture series. And today has been about being passionate at work. Shankar Sanjay from EQTD Consulting. He'll be back on the third Monday of next month. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.